You're listening to a sermon from the series Ruth, a story of hope and redemption, preached at Crossway Church in Battleground, Washington. We hope you enjoy.
I don't know if you've seen the video of this girl at her dance recital, but it's gone viral. Like, I read a bunch of different news platforms, and I think I saw it on every single one. She is a young lady who, after a dance recital, spent, like everybody else, was looking to see where her parents were. It's the Christmas season, after all. That's part of the joy of being a parent. We went to a Christmas program before. And it's interesting because all of a sudden, she had this anticipation until she heard her mom or her dad cry out, I forget which one it was, and she sees them. And there's this smile on her face. And then it's the little kid, wave, wave. But what got everybody's attention is that she literally just broke into tears and was crying and rubbing her eyes and doing this, waving in there. And I got to admit, the joy is infectious. Like, I watched that video, and I think I could watch it like 20 times because there's something about infectious joy. There's something about when we see it like this in just kind of an unmitigated way that it grabs our hearts and draws us in. Well, I start my sermon this morning this way because the book of Ruth is going to end that way. The story has been a complex story. Naomi and her family go to Moab because there's a famine in the land of Israel. And when they go there, Naomi loses her husband and her two sons. And she comes back, and her sister and her daughter-in-laws were going to come with her, but she says, no, you need to leave and stay with your own people. But Ruth didn't relent to her wishes, and she came with her and pledged herself not only to Naomi, but to Naomi's God. And even though Naomi comes at the end of chapter 1 where she's bitter and angry and has all these things that she's saying about God, in chapter 2, we saw a small progression. We saw there was a crack of hope because of Boaz and Ruth's kindness to her. And in chapter 3, we saw that she actually took herself away from herself and actually started to form a plan to help Ruth. And we saw this growth in her change. Well, today, Naomi's going to have one of these moments, one of these moments of joy. That's the way it's going to end. And so I want you, my prayer is that the hope that Naomi has gives us joy as we think about the joy that we have celebrating and waiting for the birth of Christ. So if you want to turn with me to your Bibles, we will be looking at Ruth 4, verses 1 through 22. And it is just the entire chapter. You can follow along in the Bibles in the pews, or if you have your own app, Bible, whatever it is, you can follow along. There's sermon notes in our bulletin as well. But this is the word of the Lord. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat down there just as the guardian redeemer he mentioned came along. Boaz said, come over here, my friend, and sit down. So he went over and sat down. Now, I didn't say this, but if you remember, Boaz said he would take care of Ruth, but there was one other guardian redeemer or kinsman redeemer that needed to take care of. And so he, as we said, came to the town to take care of it and to have a conversation with them. Now, Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, sit here, and they did so. And then he said to the guardian redeemer, Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me, so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line. I will redeem it, he said. Then Boaz said, on the day that you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabitess, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. At this, the guardian redeemer said, well, then I can't redeem it because it might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it. Now, in earlier times in Israel, for the redemption and transfer of property to become final, one party took off his sandal and gave it to the other. This was the method of legalizing transactions in Israel. Slightly different handshake, right? So the guardian redeemer said to Boaz, buy it yourself, and he removed his sandal. And then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, today you are witnesses that I have brought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. And I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today you are my witnesses. Then the elder and all the people in the gate said, we are your witnesses. May the Lord make this woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. And through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be that like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. So Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. And then he made love to her. And enabled her to conceive. And she gave birth to a son. And the woman said to Naomi, praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you behind without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given you birth. Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for her. The woman living there said, Naomi has a son, and they named him Obed. And he was the father of Jesse, the father of David. And this is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. And I just had my computer lock up for me, so let's see if I can find it here, my iPad. To get it out. Ram, and Ram the father of Amminadab, and Amminadab the father of Nahshon, and Nahshon the father of Salam. Salam the father of Boaz, and Boaz the father of Obed, and Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David. Okay. Well, it's interesting, isn't it, how the story ends in a moment of joy, as I said. A moment of joy where Naomi, the one who thought that she was left barren and desolate and was bitter and angry at God, now not only rejoices herself, but has the joy of all the ladies as well, singing the praises of Ruth and Boaz and seeing hope in this situation. When we left off, it was up in the air what was really going to happen. Now, I gave you the cliff and ruined the cliffhanger last week that it was going to that Boaz and Ruth were going to actually get back together. But when we left in Ruth 3, verse 18, it said that Naomi said, wait here, because Boaz is a man of his word, and he will do what is being asked of him. And that's exactly what happened. In exactly that situation, we see that Boaz does what he promised, and he took off as soon as Ruth left to go to the city gates. Now, he went to the city gates because that was like the front door of the city. I mean, I don't know if you've ever watched different TV shows, but usually if you're in a big office complex and you really need to find somebody, rather than waiting at their desk, you will wait at that front door. You will wait for them to come in and so that you can get their attention right there. And that's exactly what Boaz does. He goes to the city gates because he figures that he'll be able to catch this other kinsman redeemer in that situation. And so what we see here is that he's following his word. He's doing exactly what he's promised. And what he does is he not only gathers the kinsmen redeemers, he wants to make sure that Ruth is taken care of. And he knows that maybe this kinsmen redeemer won't follow through and that he will be the person who takes over Ruth in the field and all of that. And so he gathers the elders so that everyone knows and that this can be solidified. And so he's actually pretty smart the way that he goes about it. He brings the elders together. It also kind of shows actually Boaz's clout, if you want to know that. I mean, think about it. You're off to work. You're ready to go do something. And Boaz says to the kinsman redeemer, come sit here. And the 10 elders, come sit here. And so it shows that he has a status in the community and that he's well known for showing kindness, that people respond in that way. Now, Boaz doesn't mince any words. Right off the bat, he gets the kinsman redeemer and the elders together and he shares Naomi's desperate situation. Now, for the first time in this situation, we see that actually Naomi is going to sell her land. This is a piece that we haven't actually heard or seen anything talked about in the whole time that we've talked about in the book of Ruth. We've seen that Ruth is gleaned and that she's done this, but never has been talk that Naomi is going to get rid of her land. But that's exactly the situation that he lays out. And so he gives the kinsman the first shot. We know that the other kinsman has a closer relationship to Elimelech, and so he has the first right of refusal. And so he asks them, hey, Naomi's going to sell her land and this land of all her dead sons. Are you interested in buying it? And what we see is that the other kinsman redeemer is definitely interested. I mean, they are interested in, he is interested in this property, and he should be. I mean, this is kind of like a fire sale. Normally, when you buy land, you have to take care of the widow. And in this situation, Naomi is well beyond childbearing years. She made that clear to Ruth in the very first chapter. And so if he buys Naomi's land and gets Naomi, there is no way that a new heir will rise up that will have to take over this property. So this person will have to take care of Naomi. Yes, that will be the interesting piece, and he'll have to do that. But even more importantly, what's going to happen here is he will get that property because there will be no heirs. And so he'll expand his kingdom. He'll expand his property, and it will be great. And so you can see where he's excited, and he jumps at it. Now, the interesting thing that Boaz does, I think, is that he doesn't lay out Ruth right away. I mean, he doesn't say, hey, get this land, and actually then you get Ruth with it. He's kind of sneaky somewhat, I guess. He wants to see what this man's heart is the way that I see it. This man's obviously interested in financial gain, but when Ruth is mentioned, and he mentions her as the Moabitess again, then we see he's not quite so interested. See, he changes his mind after hearing it involves marrying Ruth because there's a potential threat to his estate. There is something that may not be so financially stable for him or something that he's interested in again. He says it. Maybe after hearing about Ruth, I won't. Now, there's a couple reasons for it, because marrying a Moabitess could ruin his reputation. We've talked about this repeatedly, that in Deuteronomy 20:23, how they said that they shouldn't marry a Moabitess. And so it could be that if he marries a Moabitess, that he doesn't want the hit that it's going to take on his reputation. But more than likely, the way that the story is crafted is it has to do with his descendants, that if Ruth had a child, that they would inherit Naomi's land, and so he wouldn't get to double the land for his family. Rather, that would go in a different direction. And so he's not necessarily interested in Ruth, or instead interested in helping out Elimelech. He's only interested in his own financial gain. We see such a difference here, don't we, between the heart of this other kinsman redeemer and Boaz. This other kinsman redeemer is all about himself and what he can get. But even the way that Boaz declares his intent to marry Ruth, he mentions not only Ruth, but continuing Elimelech's family line. There's a heart of sacrifice there. It's not just about Boaz. It's not just about his own getting what he wants. It's obvious in chapter 3 that he was interested in marrying Ruth. He was flattered by her kindness and by the way that she handled everything. But he also sees it as a bigger picture, that he, and being the kinsman redeemer, can help save the family line of Elimelech. I think it's powerful to see this contrast, and I think the way that this happens, we do see that contrast. I think that's why the narrator sets it up this way. The first kinsman redeemer is all about himself and property and accumulating that. And Boaz is all about taking care of Ruth and Naomi, and even taking care of her dead family members. I think it's important for us to note this. The heart that we've seen in Boaz is continued in this chapter. The kindness that we see in Boaz is continued in this chapter. The sacrifice that we've seen in Boaz is continued in this chapter. Boaz gets to redeem the land and gets to marry Ruth and Naomi. And this plan that they hatched in chapter 3 is coming to fruition. Now, I think it's interesting, before we go there, I mean, if I was crafting a movie, I would want it to go right to Ruth. I'd want the wedding bells to be playing in the background just as Boaz declares his love for Ruth, and we get right to the wedding. But that's not what the author of Ruth wants us to do. The author of Ruth instead has this little note and does this little aside where the elders actually pray for an offspring. Now, here is an interesting, it's interesting. I mean, there's a part of me as I wrestle through this, I'm like, why do they do this? Well, one, the offspring is the whole point of the book, right? I mean, we end with the King David, and so that's the point. We'll get to that in a second. But two, I think we also need to remember that there's a fairly decent chance that the people of that community thought that Ruth was infertile. Now, we don't know how long Malon and Ruth were married. We didn't even know until chapter 4 that that's who she was married to. We just knew that she was one of the daughter-in-laws. But if you look in chapter 1, you will see that Naomi and her husband were in Moab for a decade. And so even though we don't know how long they were married, but they were probably married for quite a time and did not have any children. And so Ruth herself could have had this stigma of infertility. And there's many of us in this room that have struggled with that and know what it's like to want to have a kid and can't. And so I think it's interesting that the elders spend some time praying that an offspring would come. But not only that, if you look at this prayer, it's kind of a crazy prayer. I mean, the first part of it makes sense. I mean, as were the witnesses, may the Lord make the woman who's coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. I mean, may you have children and may God create a family in you. That's a great prayer. May you have great standing and may you be famous. I guess that's a great prayer for the nobility of his character. I do think it's interesting that the person who is all about himself and all worried about his state doesn't get a name, and Boaz, who's the selfless one, does and carries on a big thing. Maybe it's to protect the man and his family from shame, but I think it's interesting. But then they go into this prayer where it says, may this young woman be like your family, that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Now, if you were to read a crazy story and somebody that you probably wouldn't include in a prayer, it's Tamar. I mean, Tamar lost her husband. He died. And so Judah basically then marries her to her second son, who doesn't want Tamar to get pregnant. And so he plays some tricks and he dies in judgment. And then Judah doesn't take care of her. So she tricks him into thinking that he's a prostitute. And she gets pregnant. Not exactly something that I think most of us would include in our prayers, a blessing over somebody. But what we see here is that this unconventional marriage between a foreigner who most people despised and rejected, who most people viewed had no standing whatsoever, that these elders want that union to be blessed. I mean, Ruth has already pledged herself to the Lord. She's pledged herself to Naomi. She has proven herself to be faithful. And I think these elders recognize that as unconventional as this has been, we pray God's blessing on this. And I want you to see that God often works through crazy situations. I mean, that's one of the greatest things about the Bible, isn't it? I mean, the story of Boaz and Ruth and Naomi, it's not about big things that God did, but rather it's God being faithful in the small things, slowly but surely. It's the kindness that we've seen from Boaz, the kindness that we've seen from Ruth that's transformed Naomi. And even here, Naomi's plan is coming to fruition because the elders see and they're praying a prayer of a blessing over Boaz and Ruth. And so finally, we get to the big wedding scene. Boaz returns to his bride. Can you imagine how excited Naomi and Ruth must have been when Boaz came and told them the news? I mean, they must have been waiting in anticipation, wondering which kinsman redeemer is going to go through the door. And Boaz comes and says, I've done everything I've promised. The other kinsman redeemer isn't interested. I am going to buy your land. I am going to marry Ruth. And Ruth and Naomi, the kindness that I've shown you in chapter 2 and the chapter 3, you are going to get for the rest of your life. The peace that they longed for, the hope that they had has come to fruition. And the story moves so quickly here. I mean, the author just basically says, so they became married. Ruth and Boaz become his wife. And then he made love to her. And then there's this line that has so much power. The Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. That little phrase puts Ruth in a long line of patriarchal women who the Lord, as noted, moved in a powerful way to enable them to have kids. Now, that's not always the way God works, but in this situation, that is the way that he works. It makes it clear, and I think it's a symbol for all of the readers of Israel, that there's something special about this child. Genesis records three people: Sarah, Rebecca, and Rachel. If there's ever an impressive list of matriarchs, that is it. That God that he opened up their womb and allowed them to have children. And Ruth is in this line of women. God allowed them to have a child. And that's the final scene, the scene of joy that I talked about, where a child brings redemption. Think of the transformation of Naomi. Naomi, the woman who in the end of chapter 1 ends and is telling all the ladies, "Leave me alone, I want nothing to do with you. Just call me bitter and let me hang in my bitterness." But the women didn't leave her there. Through this work of God, through Boaz and Ruth and the kindness that's shown, we see that this child has burst onto the scene and she gets this baby. And the women are around her again, and they are overjoyed. I mean, they just sing the praises of this guardian redeemer. Naomi, the one who thought that she was left empty-handed and judged by God, now has a grandchild and has someone to take care of her. And listen to just the words of this. "Praise be to the Lord who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel." Now here's the interesting thing. The author is actually pretty vague about who that kinsman redeemer is. You and I often think it's Boaz, and to some degree it is. But I think they're also talking about that baby that is actually sitting on her lap. Because what we see is right away where it goes to a genealogy. And that genealogy includes that he is the grandfather of King David. And so what we see here is that, yes, this is a story of redemption about Naomi and Ruth, but there's a bigger story of redemption that we'll look at more closely here in a little bit. But in this moment, we see that Naomi has that joy. She gets to experience a grandchild. And she definitely isn't empty-handed, right? Which is what she said, and that was her claim in chapter 1. In that moment, she's looking around, seeing all her emptiness. And in this moment, the climax of the story, she ends holding her grandchild. I want you to see, too, that Ruth is redeemed and honored. I mean, this woman has sacrificed so much. She gave up her country land. She gave up her family. She went to a desperate situation where she was going to be despised, rejected, where she was going to be treated terribly because the Moabite women were viewed in terrible ways. And yet she did it out of love and kindness, the chesed that we've talked about, the faithful kindness of God. That's what's been used to describe both Boaz and Ruth. And we see that she's honored in a pretty powerful way. It says here that you're better than seven sons, is what they say. Now, in a patriarchal society that viewed boys way better than women, that's pretty important, right? I mean, it was all about your male offspring who was able to redeem the land and carry on the name. And they were the ones that were often the focus. And these women say, this daughter-in-law that you have is better not than just than one son, but seven sons. Now, seven is the sign of completion, and so what they're saying here is, blessed be this daughter-in-law of you who has created this perfect family. And we see that Ruth, who's gone through and served silently behind the scenes and just shown such faithful kindness to her, is redeemed. She has her life taken care of because she married Boaz, but more importantly, she's honored. But as I said, the story of Ruth isn't just about Naomi. It's not just about Ruth or Boaz. It is. There are great images that we've seen, as we've said, of the kindness of God that we see through these people. But ultimately, the story of Ruth is a story of the king and of David. And what we see here is that this child that is brought hope to the nation of Israel. It's interesting that right away, what's highlighted about this son, Obed, is not just that he provided a child to Naomi or that, but it's who he's tied to, right? Not once, but twice, it highlights, look, this is Obed, who's the father of Jesse, who's the father of David. And then, as if we didn't get that enough, they say, okay, we're going to end by repeating the whole genealogy from Perez of Judah all the way back to David. Now, why does the author of Ruth end that way? I mean, couldn't we have just cut scene right there? I mean, maybe I could see the genealogy in you know, the words at the end that kind of highlight it. But is that really the thrust of the story? Well, I think we need to realize that the book of Ruth was probably written in either two time periods. The time of exile, when the nation of Israel had been exiled and their king had been gone, or it could have been written maybe in a time of a terrible king. And it's not just written to talk about Naomi and Ruth and Boaz and how God can work through difficult circumstances, although I think it's a powerful story of that. But it's also written to remind its readers that in the time of Judges, the time when everybody did whatever they wanted to do in their own eyes, that God worked faithfully through three people, Boaz and Ruth, to transform the life of a bitter and angry person, Naomi. And that God used all of this messed up situation ultimately for his glory and him providing a child that becomes the grandfather of David. And I think the message that the author of Ruth wants us to see is the message of Boaz and Ruth and kindness and how God can use that. But ultimately, it's also a message that God can take in the time of Judges. He can provide and work his plan of redemption, even in a messed up situation, and provide a king. And that would provide the people of Israel hope. That no matter what its messed up situation they were, whether they were in a situation of exile where they were waiting for this Messiah who had been longed for years to come, and when they looked at their life and their situation, they wonder, how can God work through this? I mean, we're exiled or we're under a terrible king. And the story of Ruth reminded them that no matter how dark and defeated things may seem, that God's plan was still at work, working through the often small things that we take for granted and do not recognize. And that this child, Obed, brought hope to the nation of Israel, not just for the birth of Boaz and Ruth, but for his part in the greater plan of God's redemption and bringing forth the line of David. This would have provided the people of Israel hope in their own dark times. That God can work through their small ways, and God can use whatever it takes to bring about his ultimate plan of redemption. Now that, I think, preaches to us, doesn't it? At least it preaches to me, because the story of Christmas is about exactly that. I mean, as we read through the narratives on Christmas Eve, or as you read through it yourself, what you're going to see is that God takes a unlikely person, Mary, and bestows this great honor of having her become the mother of the Son of God. And that he works through Joseph and brings them together, even though Joseph is going to be just as noble and just divorce her quietly because she's pregnant. And he says, whoa, this is part of my plan. She got impregnated through the Spirit of God. This is a miracle. You need to stay here. And in order for the prophecies to come true, he made them go through a census. So even though they were from Nazareth, they went to Bethlehem, which, by the way, is where the book of Ruth is settled. And you'll see, Obed is a child of Bethlehem who brought redemption to the nation of Israel. And Christ, our Redeemer, is that Redeemer from Bethlehem that offers hope to all. And God works in that situation. And Jesus is born in Bethlehem, that child, as a greater part of the redemptive plan that he brings. And that is what we celebrate here today, that God is still faithful at work in the small things and in the dark times to bring about his plan of redemption. And we need that hope today. Now, we know that Christ came, and that's what we celebrate at Christmas. We know that he lived a sinless life. We know that he died on the cross for our sins, and then he brings salvation. But you and I are still in a state of wandering and waiting. When will Christ come again? And I know it's so easy for us to get caught up in life that we forget that. That is really what we are longing for. But Advent is a good reminder for us that just as Christ came the first time, he will come again. And as Boaz kept his promise and returned for his bride, so too Christ will keep his promise and return for his bride, the church. Hebrews 9 says it this way: just as a man is destined to die once and for all after they face the judgment, so Christ was sacrificed once to take away the sins of many people. And he will appear again a second time, not to bear sin, but to bring salvation to those who are waiting for him. That is the good news of Advent for you and I, and that is the good news that Ruth reminds us of. That God is faithful even in dark times, even when we may not see him work, and he uses the small actions of his people to bring about his plan, the kindness of them to bring individual redemption, but ultimately his big story and his plan of redemption. And so we know that God is faithful, and just as Boaz kept his promise to Ruth and came back to get her, so Christ is faithful to you and I, his bride, those who put our hope and trust in him, and he will come back again to bring us home. And so this gives us hope. It gives us hope, and it gives us peace, that no matter what it seems to be going on in our own lives, and no matter what seems to be going on in the world around us, that God's plan of redemption will not stop. He will continue to move forward and use the kindness of people in our own lives to mold and shape us like he did Naomi. But ultimately, he will bring about his plan of redemption, and Christ will come again and usher in the new heavens and the new earth, and make life the way that it was originally meant to be. That we can have a relationship with God free from sin and death and shame and guilt. Not because of the great things we've done, but because of the great gift that Christ has given us. God gives us a peace of God that transcends all understanding, and it will guard our hearts. And the book of Ruth is designed to remind us of that truth. So the story of Ruth can be an encouragement to us when we go through that times, that God can work through suffering and redeem it as he did for Naomi. It can remind us, most importantly, that God is at work, even in those dark times, and he can use it to redeem it and build it for his glory. Because God's plan of redemption never fails. And God is faithful at his word. I want to end my sermon by just giving you an image. It's an image that I think is actually pretty interesting. In 1995, there was the Oklahoma City bombing. It's crazy to me to think that that was 1995, that it was that long ago. But Tim McVeigh loaded up a big truck and destroyed a building in Oklahoma City, a federal building. If you see the carnage of it, you can see right there the destruction that it had. But there's this tree right next to it. It's called the Survivor Tree. It was right next to the blast. I mean, just look at all the destruction around it. And if you look at that top level, I think it's actually pretty powerful. I mean, this thing should have been taken down. People thought it was going to die. They literally just kind of moved everything around it, thought they'd just let nature take its course before they cut it down. And even in that moment of destruction, they thought that that's the way it would be. But that tree didn't wilt under the pain and the heat and the suffering. It actually made it stronger. And now it's actually part of a beautiful memorial. And it's viewed, I mean, if you watch the videos, it's almost, I don't know. They probably take it a little bit more than I would like to as far as the grandness of it. But it's a beautiful story. And it survived a huge ice storm even in 2020 as well. But I want you to have this as an image. Oftentimes our lives feel like this. And we wonder where God can work through it. But the story of Ruth is this. This is the end. We will get to spend all eternity with God in the garden. And our lives will be transformed. And everything that we've gone through, every challenge that we've faced, every setback that feels overwhelming, the book of Ruth reminds us God can use as part of his plan. And God will use it to draw us closer to him and ultimately not only bring redemption in our own lives, but prepare us for when Christ comes again. That is the hope that we have. That is the hope that we long for. And that is the hope that the book of Ruth reminds us of. Let's pray.
You have just watched a sermon from Crossway Church in Battleground, Washington. We hope that you enjoyed it, and we'd love to have you come join us for a worship service on Sunday at 10 a.m. at 311 North Parkway Avenue in Battleground, Washington. If you'd like to find more information about us online, you can find it at crosswaychurchwa.com.